Hello, friends. Welcome to Read 'Em and Weep. It's me, your host, Sammy, and we have what I think is a really fun episode this week. Now, all of this week's hands come from a session I played at Stone's Gambling Hall this last Friday night, and they all focus on one central theme. I had a couple people tell me that last week's episode was really good, and one of the things that they really liked about it was that all the hands related to one central idea. And I have no idea if I'll be able to do that on every episode. Sometimes it just doesn't work out like that. I want the hands to happen organically, etc. But this session, all the hands definitely focus on one central idea, and that is focus and attention at the table. To me, being focused and attentive at the table is such a huge source of value that literally has nothing to do with poker strategy. You don't have to get any better at poker, but if you improve your focus and your attention at the table, you're just going to make more money. And I think that a lot of live players play without focus, right? They're there to have fun, and or they're there to gamble, and or to drink, and or to be social. And I enjoy those things too about live poker. I love them. But at the end of the day, I'm there to win. Like, I'm there to absorb other players' chips into my stack and make them mine. And, you know, when I step into a card room, man, it's business time. And cousin, business is a booming. So let's talk a little bit about being present and attentive at the table. Number one, I do something. So first off, like, something that I do is, a couple years ago, I had this issue where I kept always getting buried early in sessions. Like, I just play too many big hands early in sessions. I get stuck right away. I was trying to insert myself into the action a little too much early on instead of just being patient, letting the game come to me. And so what I started doing is doing deep breathing in my car before I went into the card room. You know, not like full-on meditation or anything, but literally just breathe in deep for 8 seconds, hold it for 4, breathe out for 8 seconds, and repeat it 7 times. And now I do that every single time I go into a card room. And what that did for me and what it does for me is that, A, it establishes a routine, which I think is always important in all sorts of ventures that you do. But also it kind of just helped me get relaxed and focused. You know, and I think part of that stemmed from being too excited to go play. Like, I love going to play, and it's really easy to be anxious and really just want to get in there and play. And you know, to me, the deep breathing kind of just helps me relax and get rid of that like excited energy. And the other thing is, it kind of helps me block out some of the tilt that I might be feeling. Like, we all have tilts in our life. For me, you know, sometimes like I'll go play in the afternoon and say one of my pitchers on my high stakes fantasy team is getting lit. Well, that tilts me. I don't want to bring that into the card room. Or, you know, maybe I had a tough day at work, something like that, or, you know, something I'm stressed out about or whatever's going on. To me, the deep breathing just kind of helps me block that out and get ready for the session. And I think that's really important. And I kind of stopped donking off a bunch of money at the beginning of sessions, which, trust me, is a very good thing. Something else that I think is important is, like, when I sit down at a table, I usually don't play the first hand. Like, if I'm anywhere near the blinds, I'll just wait for the blinds to pass me. And sometimes that takes 4 or 5 minutes, but it's all good. Like, I'll use that time to enter my stuff in my poker app, like how much I bought in for, what time it is, and get that stuff all set up. And another thing that I like to do is kind of just look around the table, like notice the players, like see if I recognize anyone at the table, or, you know, I can pick up anything by the way they're playing, et cetera, et cetera. And the other thing is, like, noticing the chip stacks of the table. I think knowing people's chip stacks, just approximately what they have, is super key. You know, just a couple examples of these. At this last session at Stones, like, I saw one guy limp call a raise with ace five offsuit under the gun. And I already know, like, literally by this one play that this guy is a fish, right? Like, no good, serious player would ever play ace five offsuit under the gun, let alone limp with it and then call a raise out of position. The other thing is, there was a guy two to my left who bought in short. I think he bought in for like $300. And as the session went on, he just went down, and then he never really topped off. So he was like sitting between $80 and $150 forever. And the size of his stack is really going to play into strategy and the way you play pots with him. And it can really change things when you're in a multi-way scenario where some guy like a couple guys have a big stack and then another guy has a really small stack. These are things you need to take notice of. And I think it's really a good thing when you first sit down at a table to kind of get your bearings in that regard. And that way it's easier to kind of mentally adjust as people's stacks grow and shrink, et cetera. Another thing that I think is really important in terms of just being focused and attentive is to always know how much money's in the pot, like always count the pot. And this is something that I think you kind of have to force yourself to do. And after you start doing it for a little bit, it just becomes second nature and you just constantly do it. But you always want to know how much money's in the pot. Like it's so important. It shapes everything. And you can make some really big bet sizing mistakes if you're not quite sure how much money's in the pot. So, you know, some guy raises to 15 and four players call. Okay, there's 60 in the pot. Some guy gets bets 45 on the turn and another guy calls. Well, that's another 90. So we got 150. And you just like add it up. And you don't need to be precise, right? If you're off by $5 here or $10 here, it's not a big deal at all. But what you don't want to do is be stuck on the river and some guy makes a big bet and you're like, gosh, how much was in the pot? What happened pre-flop? Like you're just taking your attention away from your hand and trying to figure out stuff that you should have already figured out. And it just helps so much with your bet sizing and your odds calculation. Like, you should just always know this stuff. So that's one thing that I've trained myself to do. And I think that's really part of being focused and attentive at the table. The last thing I'll say, and I could like go on about a million different things, and I have no idea how helpful any of this is at all. But to me, listening is so key. Like I never wear earbuds at the table. And I know a lot of people do. You know, when you're playing a 4 or 6 or 8+ hour session, like there is going to be a lot of downtime. And sometimes people like to just hang out and listen to music. But to me, like there's so much you can pick up by just listening to what's going on around you. Like the other day I was at a table and some guy got his aces cracked and his neighbor started talking to him and he goes, "Whoa, how much did you raise pre-flop?" It was a 2-5 game. And the guy who got his aces cracked was like, "Oh, I raised to 25. And the other guy's like, "Oh, you should have raised bigger. You should have raised to like 40 or 50. That's what I do because, you know, I don't want any callers or maybe just one caller, but I don't want a lot of callers." And just this one comment that like I wouldn't have heard if I wasn't listening, if I had earbuds in, tells me so much about this player. Like number one, he's a fool. Like anytime you're changing your open size based on the strength of your hand, like that's bad. And then also, if he raises to this size later in the session, I have a pretty good indication of the type of hand he might have. Like this is really key information to have. In this session at Stones, there was this kid next to me and younger guy, you know, maybe like mid-20s. And I heard him talking and he's like chatting it up with the dealers. Clearly he knows the dealers there. So that tells me he's a regular. And I picked up that he has an Eastern European accent. And there are certain things that Eastern Europeans are known for in poker. And as the session went on, you know, I could tell that this guy was a pretty good player and he was probably a studied player. And all these things were pieces of information that helped me paint a picture of what kind of player this was. There's another guy right on my right who showed up a little after we started the table. And, you know, he looked kind of pro-y. He was like, you know, wearing, you know, baggy sweats and a hoodie and, you know, he's unshaven and, you know, had a bunch of money in a fanny pack. And I heard them call him after we'd been playing for like 30 minutes. I heard them call him for the 2-5 game. And he raised his hand and said no. And that tells me, A, the guy's like used to playing bigger games. The 2-5s at Stones is pretty big. And then also possibly that he likes this table. Like if he's a regular there, he might know some of the players at the table and he didn't take the 2-5 game. Maybe he likes some of the players at this table and knows that they're not good. So that's something that maybe I can pick up on. The other thing that can happen is you can like miss really important information. At this session at Stones, there was this guy who's wearing headphones and he was involved in a pot where some guy raised to 50 and the next guy goes 150 and he counts out his money and puts the 50 in first. And then as he's reaching for the other 100, the guy with the headphones in calls the 50. And the dealer's like, "No, dude, he's raising to 150. He said raised 150. And the guy takes his earphones out. He's like, "Wait, what?" And the dealer's like, "Yeah, he raised." And the guy's like, "Oh," and he tries to take his $50 call back. And the dealer's like, "No, you got to keep it in there. Now you can either call the other 100 or fold." And the guy ended up folding. He just burned $50 on fire because he couldn't hear what was going on. And I see this sort of thing happen all the freaking time. So I personally don't wear earbuds, but my advice is if you do, just wear one so you can at least hear what's going on out of the other ear, and definitely turn off your music or whatever you're listening to anytime you're involved in a hand. Again, do what you want to do, but that's my advice. Okay, I've gone on long enough. Enough chit-chat, enough pussyfooting around. The point is, dial it in, pay attention, get your shit together. That's what all these hands are about today. Let's get into them. Okay, hand one. We are playing 1-3 at Stone's Gambling Hall. I have about 700 in front of me at this point. We're about an hour into the session, and usually I buy in deeper, but this game was a new game. It was a new table that got formed, so you can only buy in for the $500 max because it's a match stack room, but when you start a table, you can't match any stacks. It's just 500 max. So I'm up to about 700, and I'd just taken a short break, and I got back, and I'm in the hijack, two off the button, so I post my $3 blind. Early position opens to 10. A guy in middle position flats the 10. I'm next to act, and I look down at queen jack of diamonds. Super pretty hand. I call the 10. The cutoff behind me calls the 10. The button now raises to 40. Way too small with this many callers, but he does it. The big blind flats, and all the others call too, including myself. And we go six ways to a flop. Everyone's put in $40. And the flop comes jack 6-5 with one diamond. I have queen jack of diamonds. So I flop top pair with a decent kicker and a backdoor flush draw. We like it. It checks to us. We check. It checks to the original raiser, the re-raiser on the button. And he checks back too. So it checks through. The turn comes the four of diamonds, giving us a flush draw to go with our top pair. And we like that too. Now the big blind leads out for 50, which is a super small bet into a $240 pot. And now the early position guy, who is the guy that originally raised to 10, he raises to 150. And now it gets to me, and I have a pretty tough decision, I think. Obviously, we love our hand, right? Queen jack of diamonds on jack 6-5-4 with two diamonds. We have top pair. We also have a flush draw. But I don't love the situation. Like, for some, they probably think this is a slam dunk call. But the more I thought about it, the more close I actually thought this was. And the reason is, A, because we have a raiser. It's 150 for us now to win 450. And when the guy raises here, generally he has better than one pair. In fact, he can have some hands that have us pretty slaughtered. He can have sets. He can have a straight with 7-8. And the guy who originally bet, even though he bet small, like, he could also have a really good hand too. So I'm not getting the best price because it's worse than 4-1 for me to make my flush. And I'm not sure if, like, pairing the queen for two pair or hitting trips with my jack is even good. It might be, but it also might not be. The other thing is there are still players to act behind me that can re-raise. And then there's also the original bettor who could also re-raise and really get me in a situation where I'm putting in a lot of money and I'm kind of screwed. The other thing is maybe somebody has a better flush draw than me. It's jack 6-5-4 with two diamonds. Somebody could easily have like ace 5 of diamonds for a pair and the nut draw. Or they could have ace 7 of diamonds or ace 8 of diamonds or just ace deuce of diamonds. You know, hands that have a straight draw to go with their flush draw. And I could be drawing basically stone dead if like one guy has that and another guy has a hand that beats me. So I actually decide to make a really tight fold, you know, for better or for worse. I just don't think I'm getting quite the price that I need to get. And I even actually ran through what I thought these ranges could be in my poker stove. And it actually told me I had like 15% equity against these ranges that I put in. Now, I have no idea if I'm close to accurate, but I actually think it's a pretty decent fold. Except now the dealer says, sir, it's not your turn. And I'm like, oh, what? And I look two to the right of me, and there's still the guy in middle position who's thinking about what he needs to do. And I can't really see his cards. Like, he's two to my right, and he's got his chips out in front of him, and his cards are on the other side of him. So I couldn't really see the cards. So I'm like, oh, shit. And I hadn't really mucked my hand that far. I just kind of threw it like 6 inches in front of me. So I just scoop my hand back and wait for him to do whatever he's going to do. And he ends up calling the 150 after some thought. And I'm like, oh, shit, the pot odds just got a whole lot better here. And I asked the dealer, I'm like, is my hand still alive? And he's like, and you know, people at the table are like, no, he folded, you know, this and that. Now there's some commotion. So the dealer calls the floor guy over, and the floor guy comes over and the dealer tells him what happened. And the floor guy goes, his cards never hit the muck and he never said fold. So his hand's alive. And I'm like, all right, shit, let's go. Now I'm calling the 150 because the price that the pot is laying me, instead of worse than 3-1, now I'm getting about 4-1 on my call. And I just think that really tilts the odds in my favor. Now everybody behind me folds, and it gets back to the original guy who led for 50. He folds, and we go to the river three ways. It's me, the guy on my right in middle position, who I didn't know that he had cards, and then the guy who had raised to 150. And the river comes, the blessedest of cards. Hallelujah, friends. The ace of diamonds. I make the backdoor flush. I hit the second nuts. Now the early position guy who had raised to 150 on the turn, he checks. And the middle position guy who I hadn't seen his cards and acted out of turn, he checks. At this point, I think I have about 500 in front of me. And I could go for a smaller bet, but you know, my hand is going to be polarized anyway, the way that I played it. So I just decide to jam for max value. The early position guy now hems and haws, and he's just like, what the hell can you have? And blah, 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 blah. And I think he finally figures it out because he folds. He later told me he folded 6-5 for middle two pair, which makes all the sense in the world. And now it gets to the middle position guy, the guy who I hadn't seen his cards and didn't know he had enacted. And he thinks about it for a while and ends up calling it off. I show him the flush and we win a big ass pot. We stack all the chips. Takes 5 minutes to stack. It's just such a great feeling. We win all the money. Hot damn. Okay, so I won a big ass pot. That's awesome. But I actually screwed up a lot of stuff in this hand. So let's talk about it. Number one, I didn't re-raise preflop. I spent all of last episode telling you guys that when you're in something of a middle position and you have a hand that's playable, you should be re-raising. I didn't in this hand because I already had three invested in the pot because I'd posted coming back from a break and I was getting a better price on my call. And there was another caller, like there was an open to 10 and then another caller. But the reality is you should be re-raising more when there's another caller because his money is kind of dead. Like he would have re-raised himself if he had a top end hand. So you can actually get a lot more value by three betting in this spot. And I didn't. I mean, Jesus H. Christ, just did an entire episode on this. I even talked about a hand that I screwed up and still I did it again. Oh, I mean, Sammy, get your shit together. Like, I'm gonna have to write an autobiography called The Adventures of Cuckleberry Finn. This is unbelievable that I did this, but it is not the most egregious mistake I made in the hand. The most egregious mistake I made in the hand is that I almost folded out of turn. Imagine if I tossed my cards all the way into the muck and my hand was dead, or I'd said fold out loud and my hand was dead, or the floor had ruled against me. Then I would have seen the ace of diamonds come on the river and I would have known that I made a $1,100 mistake. I mean, $1,100 American dollars. That's a shitload of money. And I would have known that I screwed it up. I would have been so tilted. I would have been so steamed at myself. It would have ruined my whole night. Maybe I tilt and just donk off money because I'm super mad at myself. Or maybe I just can't even stand it and I just like rack up and go home or something. It could have fucked up my entire night. And it was a matter of me not being focused and paying attention. Yeah, I couldn't see the dude's cards. But the reality is, if I'm really being focused and taking account of every player in the pot, I would have known that the guy was in the pot. If I had looked over, I would have saw him thinking and hemming and hawing, et cetera, et cetera. I would have known that he was in the pot and I wasn't paying close enough attention. And I almost fucked myself out of $1,100. Like, so embarrassing. I pride myself on never being the guy who acts out of turn or missing action or forgetting to post blinds. And I mean, I cannot remember the last time the floor had to be called over because of something I did. I mean, Jesus H. Christ, Sammy, lock it up. Like, what is this, amateur hour? I mean, I should just crawl into a goddamn missile silo and launch myself into the sun. I mean, Sammy, sort yourself out, mate. Like, what's going on? I know that I won a massive pot in this hand, but I don't think I deserved it at all. Like, I really screwed up so many crucial things in this hand. And I mean, just have to give thanks to the poker gods for taking mercy on this brainless idiot. Just so, so, so bad. I'm embarrassed by this play. I'm embarrassed to put it on the podcast, honestly, but you know, that's what we do here. It's kind of part of the deal. And, you know, thankfully the poker gods took mercy on us, but like I said, we definitely did not deserve it. So that sets us up for the next hand. And in this next hand, it's one that paying attention to the small things does pay off. Stay tuned. All right, hand two. This is actually a couple hours into this session. I had requested a table change and I'd moved to a new table. And this is from the very first orbit at that table. So I am under the gun in this hand, probably seven hands into this new table. And I have ace jack of spades. I open a 15 and the button calls. And the button, I'll tell you a little bit about her. She's maybe late 30s, early 40s, but she's got really nice, elegant jewelry. She's got a really beautiful necklace on. She has this emerald bracelet that is blinging. Her wedding ring is crusted all over with diamonds. Like, you can tell this chick has money. She has a big stack of like over 2K. And she also has an empty glass of wine on the table. And actually, I had noticed her when I first got to the card room. And she was drinking wine then, and this is a couple hours later, and she's still drinking. So the other thing is, in the couple hands that I'd played, I'd noticed that she had played almost all of the hands in this first orbit, and she'd been taking aggressive action. She was kind of leading the action, opening a lot of hands, multi-barreling a lot of hands, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the button. I open under the gun to 15 with ace jack of spades. She calls, and now the big blind next to me also calls, and we go three ways to a flop. And the flop comes 7-7-3 with one spade. Again, I have ace jack of spades. The big blind checks to me, and I think this is pretty close. I think it can go either way, but I kind of feel like the button is the type to start blasting off if I check here. So I just decide that I don't want to put myself in the spot. I kind of want to retain control of the initiative in this hand. So I bet 20 into 45. She starts thinking about it. And now the big blind actually folds out a turn. We both notice it. And he kind of does the same thing as me, where the dealer's like, oh, it's not your turn. He's like, oh, shit. And he, you know, pulls his cards back. But we both notice this. And she thinks about it a little longer. And she ends up calling the 20. And now he does indeed fold when the action is on him. The turn comes the eight of spades, giving us the nut flush draw. So it's 7-7-3 with one spade and then the eight of spades on the turn. And I decide to check here. And even though I've picked up equity, a lot of times when you pick up equity, you want to continue barreling if you've barreled the street before. I don't know that this is an especially good card to continue aggression with, because all the hands that she called with on the flop are generally not going to fold to this card because it shouldn't hit my range all that hard. And because there was two sevens on the flop, I would be checking here with a lot of my range. Like, even if I had over pairs, I would probably be checking them a lot because she has a lot more sevens than I do, right? If I'm opening under the gun, I have, you know, 7-6 suited and 7-8 suited and ace-7 suited. But aside from that, I'm really not playing any sevens. Whereas she can be calling, I mean, she's probably playing all the offsuit sevens that are around there. She's probably playing 7-6 offsuit and 7-8 offsuit and maybe even like 7-9 offsuit or 7-5 offsuit. You know, she just has a crapload more sevens in her range calling on the button than I do raising under the gun. So I'm highly incentivized here to be checking a lot of my range. So I do decide to check, and not to anybody's surprise, she ends up taking the aggressive action, and now she bets 40. Certainly with two overs and the nut flush draw, I'm calling the 40, so I do call. And the river comes a complete blank. It comes an offsuit deuce. So I have ace jack of spades, and it comes 7-7-3 with one spade, eight of spades, and then a brick deuce. So I'm sitting here on the river with my dick in my hand with ace high. I check, and she bets 100 into 165, so a little less than two-thirds pot. Now, this bet while it's not a giant bet, is pretty polarized because she shouldn't really be betting any one pair of hands at this point. She should know that I might be playing pot control with overpairs, and that's super reasonable the way that I've played it. And most of her moderate one pair hands should really just check back for value and see if they're good at showdown. So I think if she's betting for value, it should really only be with trip sevens or better, like a flopped full house or something like that. And I should say, while this lady has been taking aggressive action, she doesn't seem like a complete nutball or that she doesn't know what she's doing. She actually kind of seems like she does know what she's doing. So I'm just sitting here thinking about it, and that's what I think of her value. So the other question is, can she have bluffs here? And the more I think about it, the more I think the answer is yes. I think she can definitely peel the flop with gutters. Remember, the flop was 7-7-3, so she can have hands like 6-5 or 5-4 that are gutter balls. But I also think she can be wider than that. I think she can have some other floats because the big blind folded out of turn, because she doesn't have to worry about that player all of a sudden check raising or having a good hand himself. So it just opens her up a lot more to float with all sorts of bullshit hands like Queen Jack or Queen 10 or just stuff like that to try to take it away on the turn in the river. And I just think, man, like, I think she can have a lot of bluffs here. And so I end up calling, and she says, "I missed, you're good." And she mucks her hand. Hallelujah. We love it. I think this was a really good job by me because I paid attention to the things that were going on. I paid attention to the fact that this woman has money. So the money that she's playing with in this game probably doesn't mean a lot to her. I noticed that she's drinking. I noticed that she's playing loose and aggressive, but not necessarily bad. And I had a good idea that she would be more apt to make aggressive moves because not only was I paying attention to her, but I also noticed that the big blind next to me folded out of turn and realized that that could open up a path for her to have way more floats. So I'm proud of the way that I kind of analyzed this hand. We're lucky that we were right, and we really like that. Yeah, allow myself to congratulate myself. Good job, Sammy. Pat on the back. Obama putting a medal on himself. .meme. Now, I know this has already been one of the longer episodes that we've had, but I'm actually going to give you guys a bonus hand. We're throwing in a bonus hand. I played this session. It was like 6.5 hours. There were a ton of fun hands. I wish I could talk about more of them, but this bonus hand is one that I think was just super fun and also has to do with paying close attention to things and taking advantage of that. So stay tuned for it. All right, throw me a freaking bonus hand here. So this hand comes from actually very early in the session. We'd been playing about an hour between 6 and 8 p.m. Stones runs this cool promotion called the Lucky Hand. And what the lucky hand is they announce a hand. And if you win with that hand, the house gives you 100 extra bucks. Very fun. It's a lot like the Seven Deuce game, only obviously the house is paying it. And the caveat is that you need to win at least 20 big blinds for the promotion to be active. So in the 1-3 game that I'm playing, there needs to be at least 60 bucks in the pot for you to get the bonus. So they announce over the loudspeaker that the first bonus hand is 5-4. And I'm under the gun. I look at my hand, and lo and fucking behold, if I don't have 5-4, I have 5-4 of clubs. And it's like, oh shit. All right, what are we going to do here? Now, I think it would be fully reasonable to raise and try to steal the pot later. Hope you get a couple callers and then steal the pot later. But this table had been playing pretty sticky and pretty aggressively. And I thought that that path might be pretty difficult to take. So I decided to do something different. I decided to limp under the gun. And if you guys know anything about my strategy, you know that I never, ever limp, certainly not under the gun. But these guys don't know me. I play at Stones very rarely. I've never played with any of the players at my table before. They have no idea that this move is out of the ordinary for me. And they just think, oh yeah, like some other guy's limping preflop, like nothing to see here. So I limp for the three. And one of the other reasons that I do this is I don't want to go freaking crazy trying to win 100 bucks. I can't tell you how many times I've played the Seven Deuce game and donked off a shitload of chips just because I was trying to win this little Seven Deuce bonus. Like, it can get you into a lot more trouble than it's worth. So I decide to do something a little creative here. I limp for three. And then the guy to my left, the short stack guy that I was talking about earlier, he raises to 10 over my limp. Now it gets to a guy in middle position. And again, we've been playing about an hour, and this guy had been squeezing quite a bit, and he was squeezing light. One time he tried to squeeze and then somebody shoved over his squeeze and he folded. Another time he ended up trying to squeeze over the short stack guy, but the short stack guy called because he only had like $80. And the guy who tried to squeeze showed a five at the end. It was no good. It was like bottom pair, but he just shows a five and the other guy beat him. So obviously he had not pocket fives. He would add a set. He had like ace five suited or something like that. But the point was the squeeze was definitely in this guy's repertoire. So I limp for three. The guy next to me raises for 10, and then super squeeze happy guy now re-raises to 45. It gets back to me and I see a golden fucking opportunity. And I limp re-raise to $175. The guy who raised to 10 gets out of the way, and it gets back to Mr. Squeeze. And he thinks about it, and he thinks about it, and he hems and haws. And I'm like, please fold, please fold, please fold, please fold. And he folds the hand. He folds it, and I show 5-4 and win the pot because there was $62 in the pot. It was the $4 from the blind, plus my limp for 3 is 7. The raise to 10 is 17. And then the raise to 45 is 62 because it all happened pre-flop. They don't take any rake out. I flip over my 5-4. I win the $62 in the pot and I get my $100 bonus. On the very first lucky hand of the night, I get the hand and win it. Super fun. But let me tell you, this was not only fun, but also a case of me winning this hand because I was paying attention. I was counting all the money in the pot, and I knew there was just over $60 in there to make it qualify. I also knew that the guy who re-raised to 45, I noticed the way he was playing. I told you I noticed these hands that he'd shown down, and he wasn't necessarily doing this with just high-end value. This was part of his strategy, the way he liked to play, and I'd already seen him fold one hand when somebody jammed over the top of him. So I knew that this had a decent chance of working. Furthermore, it was just, I told you guys on a previous episode that when people limp re-raise from early position, they like always have it. They just always have aces or kings or something awesome like that. And anybody that's played for any amount of time, they know this too. So I knew that my move would look super strong. So the fact that I knew what the, you know, I was listening and knew what the high hand was, the fact that I knew this guy was squeeze happy, the fact that I knew exactly how much money was in the pot, it was just a super cool hand. It was fun. And I think I made it all happen because I was paying attention and really put it all together and made it happen. So I'm happy for myself. Let's do a second Obama putting a medal on himself .meme. This was a really fun session at Stones. I sing Stones' praises every time I'm there. I just think it's a great card room. And we had a lot of fun in this session. So that is going to wrap it up. I always appreciate you guys listening. I hope you had fun on this episode. I hope that the fun of this session came out. Like I said, there's a lot more hands that I wish I could talk about, but we have no time for that. We've gone on long enough. As always, you guys, I appreciate you listening. If you have a quick minute, subscribe to the podcast. If you're really feeling generous, look at your phone right now. Scroll down a little bit to where the stars are on your podcast app. Give me 5 stars if you like the podcast. If you don't feel compelled to give me 1 star. You can just skip it. It's all good. But again, I appreciate you guys. And until next week, play good and run pure.